This podcast is Entail Enhanced. To see pictures, articles, and links of what's being discussed, download the Entail app.
Hi, I'm Anshul, YouTuber, Instagrammer, a real voice for the brown girls, and now an author. Pre-orders for What Would the Auntie Say the book are now available on Waterstones, WH Smith, Amazon, and all other major book retailers. Join me and some very special guests where we discuss taboo subjects and really give the aunties something to talk about. In today's episode, I'm joined by TV presenter, broadcaster, and now also an author, Anita Rani. I love how she's been an amazing representation for South Asian women on our TV screens and huge radio shows, and showing us that you can be successful without always going down the academic path. In today's episode, we're discussing what it's like to pick a career outside of the norm within our culture, how it feels to work in a predominantly white industry, and whether being a boss brown babe means being intimidating when dating men, which we know is the auntie's worst nightmare. Oh my God, I'm so excited to have you on my podcast. I'm going to jump straight in. Anita, you really
have a lot to talk about, so let's go for it.
Yeah, we do. And you really do need no introduction. However, I do ask all my guests, so please do introduce yourself.
Oh my God, you have to introduce yourself.
Yeah. Okay.
My name's Anita Rani, and I am a TV presenter and broadcaster. I'm from Yorkshire, and I'm probably one of the few Asian women you find jumping around in the countryside on BBC One on a Sunday night on Countryfile. And as of January 2021, I'm also a Woman's Hour presenter. Fist bumps all round.
Oh my God, fist pumps, twerks, the lot, literally. I love that. Yeah, honestly, any celebration dance going, a bhangra, a move, a light bulb, all of it. I love that. That is incredible. But being a TV presenter, broadcaster, doing all of these amazing things, it's not the norm in South Asian culture. Like you said, you're one of a few Asian women doing it. And I really, really would love to speak to you further on that today. But I want to rewind for a moment, back it up for a second. And I want to know, growing up, what sort of expectations did your family have for you in terms of your career?
So my mum and dad are quite different, I would say, to your stereotypical Asian parents. But my dad in particular, he's a proper northerner. He came to Britain when he was 4 years old. And so he's a real Yorkshireman. And then we married my mum, who came from India, to marry him. They met at Heathrow Airport and chilled for the first time.
What? That's down the road. Love that.
That was it. And then they set up a manufacturing business on their own. So they're a pretty dynamic couple. And they always wanted me to pursue what I wanted to do. And I think they just knew, my dad always says, we knew we had a really willful daughter from day one. Like I said to dad, once years ago, I was like, you know, thanks for letting me do what I wanted to do. And he said, we didn't let you do anything. You just told us what you wanted to do. And we just kind of allowed it to happen. I know I'm very aware that I didn't go into a traditional South Asian career. You know, I didn't become an accountant or a lawyer or a doctor or a dentist. And I always knew that I wasn't going to do that. That wasn't for me. Although when it came to picking my degree course, my dad was a bit like, oh yeah, of course you're going to go and study law. I'm like, really? When did you become stereotypical dad? And I thought, you know, I love the idea of being a barrister and arguing cases. And then I thought, no, you know what? I really love the idea of being in LA Law, which was a big law TV show where I was watching.
Wow.
But I'd already been working at a local radio station in Bradford. And so I'd already been doing lots of radio and drama and extracurricular stuff. So yeah, I kind of had a plan, you know, I did want to go and do drama. That was vetoed. They said no. And then I found a course doing broadcasting at Leeds Uni, and it was a brilliant course. And I just said, look, this is what I want to do. And they said, all right, go for it.
All right, I guess so. Honestly, I feel like I can relate to you on so many levels, because I'm also that child that is sort of like, you couldn't tell me what to do because I'm going to do it anyway. Even if they had a plan for me, it's not going to go to your plan. I'm going to do what I want to do anyway, which I love. But did you ever feel like pressure to follow a certain path? And it may not have been your parents, but maybe from the community or just being South Asian, did you ever feel that pressure?
No, not in terms of career. Never, 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 never. Actually, I was really aware that I just wanted to do what I wanted to do, and I wanted to do something different, and I didn't want to be told. I mean, if my parents can't tell me, then who the hell is anyone else to tell me, right?
Right.
And definitely my mum got a lot of shit from people, like my aunties, whoever these women are, you know, yeah. See my mum and say, like, so for instance, I grew up in Bradford. And I went to Leeds Uni, and Leeds is 10 miles away from Bradford. And this is like in the 90s, right? So I'm second generation, but absolutely, girls, I mean, I'm hoping that life is a bit different for your generation, for girls in their 20s now, but maybe it isn't.
Let's see.
Yeah, but definitely girls weren't going to uni, weren't staying away from home. Like, friends of mine really had to kind of battle to get that to happen. But I was like, I know it's 10 miles away, but here's the deal. If I get into Leeds, I don't want to stay at home. Like, I have to go to uni. I have a uni experience. And I negotiate. And my mum and dad were like, yeah, fine. And my dad actually was really excited because he wanted me to do that. He wanted me and my brother to do the things that he never had the opportunity to do. But definitely my people did say to my mum, which I will put out there, my mum quite enjoyed telling me that people had said to her, oh, all this freedom you're giving your daughter. And my mum would then say, You see, I'm giving you all this freedom, too much freedom.
Use it against you, like, look at what I'm doing for you.
Yeah, man, guilt. Asian mothers have guilt.
Yes, they're really good at that.
Yeah, they can just come in with that screw and twist it whenever they want.
Yeah, it works.
It does. Of course it works. It works because we know what our mums have been through, right? So they know that, especially as their daughters, you kind of want to do your own thing, but you also... And this is the dichotomy of being a South Asian girl. We, especially as the eldest, and especially my generation, you want to do your own thing, and you're going to forge ahead, build your life and build your career and do all those things. And yet still, you want to make sure that your parents are happy.
Yes.
It's a strange world that we have to navigate.
It really is. And it's that thing of making them proud. And I always feel like, this pressure. Maybe they don't say that I have to go and make them proud, but it's that thing. It's just in you. You know how hard they've worked in whatever they do, and they do long hours. They work 6 days a week. You know, they are. I don't want to say their age because they still think they're young. So I don't want to say how old they are. You know, but they're grandparents now. Let's say,
and they're still young, right?
Well, yeah, they're still young.
My parents are in their 60s.
Okay, cool. My parents are in their 60s as well. Hopefully my dad doesn't shoot me for saying that.
Would he? I mean, it's pretty obvious. You're going to be, uncle, you're in your 60s. Get on with it. Like,
no, honestly, I do remind him, but he really is. He's mentally, he thinks he's somewhere else. So
yeah, that's the best way to be. Like,
he's in denial.
Yeah, but I think you can only embrace age, right? And it's vitality. There's no point in why lie about your age? Because you are getting older is inevitable. However, being youthful and vibrant and having energy, this is something that you can always have. And both my parents are in their 60s. They had me super young, actually. My dad was 20 when he had me, and my mum, she was only 24. And they're both, neither of them are 70. And they are just the most energetic, positive, brilliant people I know to this day. Like, I phoned them on a Sunday morning, and my dad's like, they're both up first thing in the garden or cleaning the car. Like, I've never seen those guys sit still for a second.
It's crazy because they're even though they're much older than me, I feel like they've got a better social life than I do, and they've got far more energy than I do. Honestly, every single weekend they've got something planned, something booked in, they're going somewhere doing things, and I'm just like, no, I'm just here working, like, I'm staying in on a Friday night.
Yeah, I know. But it's great though. You want to see your parents enjoying themselves. They deserve it, right?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. But yeah, it's that thing about making them proud and just wanting to do well. So I don't know, there is that Asian pressure of making your parents proud.
Yeah, I mean, I guess exactly what you've said, you know, you've seen them work really hard. But my thing was, I just wanted to be independent. I wanted my freedom. I wanted to not have to answer to anybody. And I wanted to live my own life. So went off to uni, did my course, and then got to London as soon as I could. I did a bit of traveling in between, which was another thing that most Asian parents back then didn't let their daughters do.
A lot of Asian parents don't let them do it now, even.
Yeah. I mean, I went to East Africa back hitchhiking and camping, which was like, I mean, they were like the stuff they allowed me to do. But then I'll tell you what it is. They trusted me. They trusted me. And also they trusted me to make the right decisions. They trusted my capacity to go into the world and handle myself. My mum to this day still says, and I'm not sure she should say, she was like, I would worry about your brother more than I would worry about you. She's like, you go out on a Friday night with your mates. And I'd be like, right, she'll be fine. Your brother, you know. So, and I guess that's why when I, you know, and I make the decision, I want to go backpacking. I want to go here. This is what I want to do. I'm disappearing for 2 months. Sorry, see you later. And yeah, I can't even explain how it happened. I guess there was just no choice for them in many ways. And they just thought she's going to do what she wants to do. And we shouldn't stop her from doing that.
Yeah. And maybe it's a thing about you being really, really sure of yourself or the choices that you're making. And I think that can make a huge difference in how you tell your parents, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that, and how they receive what you're saying.
Absolutely. And also, right, so my world was very white. I went to this really posh private girls' school where all my mates are white, and their lives were very middle class, because I think our South Asian story, class is a big part of it, right? So, you know, my grandparents came over in the 50s, classic migrants, you know, from Punjab. And my parents worked hard to give me and my brother the opportunities that they didn't have, right? And part of that was sending me and my brother to these like posh white schools. And so my peer group, my mates, were all children of doctors and lawyers and, you know, middle class architects and like middle class, like lovely families sitting at dinner tables, eating dinner together, you know, having conversations, no arguing.
Yeah, no arguing.
And I guess that, you know, then for them, life choices were always different. So there were conversations about backpacking and taking a gap year or going on holiday or, you know, just adventurous stuff, and my eyes were open to other bits of culture and music and books and cinema and art. And I suppose that was partly to do with friends, but partly to do with my school and partly to do with my own craving for those things. So you search it out. So when I decided I fancied going to East Africa for 2 months, they were like, go do it, you know.
Yeah. That's incredible. I feel like your parents are far more open-minded. I'm not going to say parents. I'm going to say than my dad, because he's just maybe it's the people that they are around. Because I think when your Asian parents are around other people that have children that are doing other things, they feel a bit more confident and their minds open up. But my dad in particular has a lot of Asian friends and works with Asian people. So in his mind, or the conversations they're having are basically still very, very traditional and backwards, that, you know, girls don't do certain things. Or
and that was my family. And that was my family, honestly. And that's my mum and dad's got a huge, amazing group of Indian friends up in Bradford. Right, they've called themselves the A team. What a bunch of saddos!
I love that.
I honestly have to say, my dad just didn't care. He's always just done things his own way, and people could tell him what their opinions might be, but he will only do what he wants to do. And he would, you know, when I was born, my dad was still they were still young and just starting out, but he bought a crate of, they say it's champagne. I reckon it was probably Carver.
Yeah. You
know, they bought a crate. Then legend has it that my dad bought a crate of champagne.
Let's just say it was champagne.
Yeah, that's why I love it so much to this day. And my grandma said, you know, we don't celebrate girls. So,
yeah.
I mean, that is so, that is my world. I grew up in a really Punjabi society and family. However, my parents chose, my dad and with my mum, chose to do it their own way. And that started by them leaving the family home.
Yeah.
You know, really young, they just decided that they weren't going to stay in the family unit and they just went off. And that was quite controversial. Which, you know, when I don't know about you, but I'm sure every other South Asian listening to this knows that when the whole Harry and Meghan thing was happening, I was like, this is just basically every Bollywood bloody...
Oh, my God.
For what? Like, all she's... Like, so they've decided to leave the family home and they're dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, literally, this is like an Indian drama. This is an Indian... I even had a huge argument with my dad because he was anti-Meghan, obviously, because it's all the girls' fault.
Yeah, based on what?
Yeah, and I was just like, how can he, like, it's Harry's choice too. Like, what? Yeah, no, I feel you. It was a complete Indian drama.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what happened with my mum, right? So to then, I mean, it was like she took the boy away. No, like yeah. The boy didn't have an opinion or a say or a, I mean, right. She's just the perfect excuse to get out of the family home. That's
yeah.
It.
Yeah, exactly. That is hilarious. Going back to like you always wanting to have a creative sort of career, what sort of influences would you say that you had around you that inspired you, and or did you have any at all? Just because if there, I feel like there you're someone that has set the blueprint, and like you said, there aren't really a lot of people in these mainstream sort of industries that are South Asian. So where did you get this influence from?
I honestly, like, I remember watching an amazing film. If you haven't seen it, everyone needs to watch it. It's Bargy on the Beach. And it was written by, directed by, you haven't seen it?
Until no.
Weekend plan, sorted.
Okay, sorted.
It's directed by Gurinder Chadha. It was written by Mira Sayal. And came out when I was about 15. And I watched it and I just thought, oh my God, this is the first time in my life I have seen my life, my stories, people, characters I recognize on a movie. But it made me think, oh, we can do this. I can do something different. I can tell stories. I was just really into drama as a teenager. I went to, did extracurricular stuff, was a member of my local theater. And then because I was doing... working at the radio station, I just thought, this is it. This is what I want to do. And on my course at uni, I was the only Asian woman on it, obviously, but there weren't a great many role models. But I guess what we do when you don't see yourself reflected in wider culture is you can see the universal in other people. So anyone that was vaguely an outsider or any program that was vaguely subversive or against the norm, I was into. So I used to love watching like Friday night Channel 4, The Word, which was like anarchic, chaotic, naughty television. Or I don't know, there was a travel program called Rough Guide with this amazing presenter called Magenta Divine, who just always wore sunglasses and was just so cool. And this was, you know, before everybody just went backpacking. This was, you know, a really radical holiday show at the time for sort of young people going to places that you wouldn't normally see on TV. So these are the people that you kind of look up to, or I'd listen to radio and just somehow feel, if they can do it, why can't I?
Yes, absolutely.
Without even seeing myself.
Yeah, absolutely. But being a South Asian woman in a predominantly white industry, how does it feel?
Oh,
yeah, I want to know.
What does it feel like? So obviously I've written about so much stuff in my book.
That's yes. Kind of,
yeah, the right
which
sort
I'm
of
loving.
It. Are you? I'm so yes. Pleased. You know, Anshul, if you love it, then, and if you can relate to it, then I've done something right.
I've got it right next to me. And yeah, I've been loving it.
Good. Is there stuff you can relate to in it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And this is what I feel like I can resonate with you so much on so many different things and different levels. And I feel like we are very, very similar. From reading your book, I feel like, if I'm honest with you, you're like me in the future.
Great.
Which and a great role model. And even you've touched on anger and things like that. And I'm generally I've been an angry person. So there's just so much I can relate to you on.
Good. And you know what? I feel like I wrote it for you and I wrote it for so little me. I wrote it for all that. Like, there's so many amazing books that have come out that I've read. And I'm like, yeah, but nothing is really speaking to the South Asian woman's experience of living in Britain.
Exactly.
And so much. And it is different to the male experience. It's so different to what the boys have to put up with. And I just wanted to call it out and call a lot of things out, smash some taboos, because if you don't, then who's going to do it?
Yeah.
And your question was about working in my industry.
Yes, and how does it feel?
sometimes, I mean, it's amazing, right? I love working in TV. I love working in radio. I love my job. I love the day-to-day of it. But it's been hard work to get here, right?
Yes.
Like, we have to work harder. That's it. Yeah. Until we have people in places of positions of power, I mean, things are changing. I think we're living through a really incredible time right now where everyone's talking about their experience. People aren't afraid to talk about their race and what their experience is. Whereas when I was coming up through TV in the last 20 years, there's no space to talk about it. So it just, at times it was very lonely, but actually now it's like, it's brilliant. It's brilliant. And yeah, I feel like there's lots of work to do, but yeah, at times it can be very funny as well, being the only brown face. I often just say I'm the only Northerner on a shoot, never mind the only woman and the only Asian woman. So we've got a long way to go yet.
Yeah, exactly. There's lots of different things. But what challenges have you had to face being quote unquote different? Is there anything you've ever felt like you've ever been on a job or a set and you've come across something and it's just, yeah, not felt right?
Oh my God. Like, you know, I guess so much shit has happened. Like just casual things, like somebody might have done an Indian accent once, or, you know, somebody just says something that's a bit off. That is always, you know, things like that can happen in the same way that, you know, people might make very sexist remarks. Things are changing for sure, but you're just always very aware that, you know, we don't see our color. I never saw my color, but what happens is when you enter into an industry that is very white, you realize that people do see your color first, and especially
yes.
the creative industry.
Yes, this is exactly how I feel. Yeah. Like genuinely, I feel like I never see my color. I don't see other people's color. I don't judge people for their color either. But then all of a sudden, sometimes in some situations when you are the only brown person, which is very often, you do notice that you are different. Or sometimes I'm like scared. I've said this before on my podcast. I'm scared I might say a word in an Indian accent. I might say, I don't know. And I don't have an Indian accent, but it's just going to come out. The other day I accidentally said video instead of video.
Amazing.
And I'm just cringing. I wanted to curl up and die. And it's like, I shouldn't even be ashamed of this. I still live with my parents, so I'm around them so much, and the accent is going to come through sometimes.
Imagine if I'm woman now, instead of government, I said gourmet.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my. Please. Please. Do it. Oh, my God. I dare you. Please, please, please.
I'm going to say gourmet.
Please do. And if you ever say Piccadilly Circus, say Bigadli.
America.
Yeah, America. Please.
You're speaking to us live from Canada. Okay. You know what it is? Like, I feel like we become very good at adapting ourselves to fit the situation around us. And I think on some level, as little Asian girls, we've been doing that from day one, right? Whether that's knowing how to behave in front of our grandparents, parents, going to school, being with your friends, and to some degree, we all do it. But I talk about in the book how, you know, I'm just became very good at dialing down my Indianness and like recognizing where it is acceptable and where it's not. You know,
where is it acceptable and where isn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, now it's just acceptable anywhere. And like, I'm like the crazy flag flying Asian woman who's just going to talk about everything and anything. And that has changed in the last few years for a number of reasons. But, oh no, I think it's just been aware since I was a kid, like if you say anything about being Indian, then people bristle. You know, people instantly feel like it's a slight on them or that they start taking it personally. And it's like, nobody wanted to hear about our experience. People just, it's like, you're here, just don't put it in my face.
Yeah.
Just be an acceptable Indian person that isn't just too Indian.
Yeah, and make sure you fit in, basically. Yeah,
exactly. And assimilation was what we were all taught was what we needed to do, which is what my parents thought they were doing. They were sending us to the school. I came out, you know, speaking the lingo of a middle-class white person. But then you get into these work environments and realize actually it's still not enough. Like people just don't see you. But you've just got to work. I've just had to work really hard. And trust me, I'm not saying I love it. And I'm just like you, Anshul, we know we have to work hard, right?
Yeah.
That's what us South Asian girls do. We're grafters. We just know what's required of us. Our resilience is our superpower. We are badasses.
We really are.
But things are changing where the only difference is we have to prove ourselves more than anyone else.
Definitely.
So, you know, whatever our line of work is, if we want to go for that promotion or if we want to, so in my line of work, it's creative, you know, constantly having to break down the barriers so that people understand that you can tell story. You want to tell your South Asian stories, but we can also tell stories that are just relevant to everybody. Right.
Yes.
So why can't I be on Country File?
Yes.
Feel mad to think about.
Yeah, exactly. Well, this is a thing. Sometimes I feel like in these media creative industries, people put us in a box of like, okay, just Asian stories or just Asian things. And you're like, you don't know. I am more than just being Asian. Not that that's, you know, it's not a bad thing. Or like, I don't have to put myself in this box, and I don't only appeal to an Asian market. I'm more than that. I listen to all types of music. I go to all the same things as everybody else does. So I don't understand why we are put in these boxes.
Yeah, I think people just need trying to still get their heads around it that, you know, Asian girls do things other than make roti.
Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, don't get me wrong, like I feel like I'm like if there's an Asian story to tell, I want to tell it.
Because absolutely.
I've written the book because I feel like it's for everybody who can understand and relate. So I've written it for obviously Asian girls. I want to write it to explain a little bit about who we are. I've written it for anyone who ever felt like an outsider, but also I've written it for anyone who doesn't understand and who just wants an insight. So I guess we have a job to do of explaining. I don't know. Is it our job to explain?
Yeah, maybe it's our job now to, instead of fit in, allow other people to enter into our world. And maybe it does need explaining because there are so many different parts of being South Asian. And sometimes I can't get my head around half of it that, yeah, you do need to explain it to everybody else.
Yeah, and also then for people to understand that we are not just one homogenous group, right? As you say, we're using this term South Asian. It's huge and all-encompassing. It takes in, you know, four different countries and
languages, skin tones,
languages, religions, a lot, exactly. Culture and, you know, within communities, different cultures.
Food.
And clothes, all of it, all of it.
Yeah. I think definitely it's time that we start, instead of just fitting in, allowing other people to fit in, like meshing together, maybe.
Yeah. And also speak out about our experience to empower us a little bit. You know, I always felt, you know, growing up, you were made to feel ashamed of your ethnicity. You were made to feel that you keep, that is something. And so, you know, I'm fiercely proud of my Punjabi heritage. I love being an Indian woman. I love it. I love it. I love it. I think we are just so blessed to be born in two different cultures, to innately understand how to, you know, what it means to be from an Eastern culture and what comes with that. Just beautiful ancient traditions and philosophy and stories. And we haven't even got onto the clothes that we get to wear and the beautiful fab, you know, it's just amazing. Yeah. The food. Oh my God. And it took a long time, and I've always loved it, but I've always loved it behind a closed door.
Yeah.
And now that I'm where I am, it's like, actually, I'm going to tell everyone that this is actually nothing to be ashamed of.
This is me, and I'm proud.
Yeah, and if I'm on using my platform now, if I can't be proud, then, you know, it's all that, like you say, what young women looking up to me, it's about empowering the next generation, isn't it?
Absolutely.
You know, if someone said to me years ago, oh, we all thought you were going to marry a Gora, right? Not that that would bloody matter had I married anyone, right? It's totally irrelevant. Let's get this straight. If you even want to get married, can I just put that out there?
Yeah.
Whole nother conversation.
Yeah.
I don't think it's essential. I question the whole system of marriage anyway. But I was like, but even that question, that it was so strange to hear that from someone Indian. I guess, you know, I've always been put in a bracket of being a coconut and all that, and it's like, actually, I'm so rooted, I'm so fiercely aroused, and I'm on a And now that I'm here and I've made my way in this industry full of predominantly white people, it's really nice to be able to tell our stories. And I did that by telling the partition story, right? That was a moment that I will never forget, that really felt appreciated by a lot of people from India and Pakistan whose families went through it. So I don't know where I started and where I've ended, Anshul. This is going to happen a lot. I'm going to start in one place and completely different.
that's what chats are all about, isn't it? I always do that with my friends. I'll start a story and I'll go off on a tangent and I'm somewhere else by the end of it. So don't worry, I do the same thing all the time.
Turning to our mothers.
Yeah,
my mum starts a conversation halfway through because she's had half of it in her brain and then splits. Yeah. I'm like, Mum, no one knows what you're talking about.
I'm like, back it up a minute. I need like some context or something. I don't know what's going on. Yeah, I'm with you. But just going back to careers, I know that you're extremely career driven as a South Asian woman, which is amazing. But I feel like with this comes other pressures from family, being concerned that you need to settle down, or sometimes there's this thing of putting your career first is a bad thing. And it can be, it can be a negative. Is that something you've ever had to deal with?
Well, as I say in the book, and I've been really revealing, right? I've really opened up about a lot of stuff and I've really honestly spoken about my own life experience, which is hopefully empowering, although it's very nerve-wracking at the minute because the book hasn't come out, so we'll see. I've sort of also said how it didn't matter how successful I became. I was living in London. I bought myself a flat. In fact, I bought myself two flats. I had my own independent life. I was doing my own thing, and yet still, it was not, I was on national telly, I was hosting Watchdog, I was on The One Show, and yet still my mum would phone me every single night pretty much and say, when are you going to marry? When are you going to get married? And I'd go to family functions and they'd all just say, when are you going to get married? Da 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 da. Shit, like what is wrong with us? Like, and that message, that dialogue, that mantra has been with me since the day I was tiny. It's almost like the idea that a woman can be independent and on her own is so shameful for a, like, it's so terrifying for a family. Like, what is this girl up to? Why is she living on her own? What is she doing? I'm like, what difference does it bloody make? She's like doing her thing, right?
She's killing it. Exactly. No, I like, this is like my family. Even on the weekend, my brother's only just getting married and he's a year younger than me. And even on the weekend, I had family ask me, so when are you getting married? I'm like, I've just been writing a book myself.
How old are you?
I am 29. I'm 30 this August. So
You better get on with it.
Right. I'm coming up to that 30 mark. So yeah, you can understand where the pressure's on.
I mean, seriously, I don't know what to say other than, just don't get sucked in. Like, I feel like the pressure, the drip, 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 drip can really, it's really detrimental. I've like spent so much time worrying about, like arguing about with my mother, like marriage. And actually before I wrote this book, I had to have a really honest conversation with my mum because I was about to call some stuff out. And my mum was like, just say it. She's like, you know what? You are educating me. And she said, I just did what I thought was right based on my own upbringing. But she said, I was wrong. She said, I shouldn't have done that. And I shouldn't have put so much pressure on you. And there's a huge amount of expectation on us that we are successful and we succeed, but also we keep our parents' pride by marrying, but not just marrying the right person, right?
Right, exactly. And you're not actually, it's like you haven't reached that full height of success, no matter what you've done, what you've achieved. You know, you're presenting Watchdog, you're on The One Show, you're doing all sorts of incredible things, but there's still something missing. Something's almost not good enough. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And they were just obsessed with me settling down, whatever that means. But and I was 32 when I got married, and that felt like, my mum was like, everyone just made me feel like it was so old. And now I'm like, what? I was so young.
Yeah.
Too young.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't be, I'm just pursue your dreams. I feel like our families need to adapt a little bit and learn and just give their daughters a break. But you know, we have the double burden with the pride and the shame of our families. So we have to make them feel proud. And if we put one foot wrong, then we've been told that we will bring great shame. And it's appalling. It's actually disgusting, to be honest. We need to, it needs fixing.
It does need fixing, but I think we're going to fix it. We're getting there. We're having these conversations. So we're doing something. So I feel like it's a start at least.
Yes. And I have to, this is exactly what it's about. And like your podcasts and just talking about our stories. And I feel for young women who might be feeling very alone or very trapped or very confused, you know, being able to hear these conversations in a space, you know, is empowering. It should help them. Yeah,
absolutely. Before your partner, before your husband, had you ever been in any like past relationships where the person was either intimidated or frustrated by your success or ambition? Because I feel like it's so common with successful women or women that are career driven that it's almost like, I mean, I've had comments from aunties and whatnot to be like, oh, you know, you look too independent. You look like you're having too much fun.
What does that even mean?
Exactly. Like, what am I supposed to do? Dull down my life, dull down my career, or make myself less busy and just wait for someone? I don't get it. So, and also their approach is that men find it intimidating. And to some extent, I do agree that some men do find it a successful woman, a career-driven woman, intimidating. I mean, I guess those are the wrong men to be with. But yeah, is that ever something that you've ever had to deal with yourself?
All the time, absolutely. Like I have had relationships in the past, shock, horror.
Oh God, oh no. It's out there now.
I know, it's out there. I mean, it's in the book. It's hilarious. Yeah. I've talked about trauma, alcoholism. I've talked about domestic violence. I've talked about so much stuff, but the thing that's worrying me the most is like talking about my white boyfriends.
Oh my God. Not, oh my God.
But yes, I have had that experience. Absolutely. I think men are intimidated by successful women because it's a reflection on them. And I have had men who've tried to turn that down and it's not gone down well for them. Let's just say.
I love that.
Yeah. It's like as soon as somebody tells me that they feel the need to be able to advise me really on how hard I should or shouldn't be working, telling me that I shouldn't be working so hard, it's like, yeah, no, I'm sorry.
Yeah, goodbye, block.
Yeah, or why are you like, yeah, all of it. Just, yeah, no, not, yeah, you're not meant to be in my sphere. I do feel that there is a generation of men that have grown up. We are sort of, especially as Asian women, we're the first generation of girls who are this independent, and we have made choices and we are about for ourselves. We are more educated than we have ever been, and actually South Asian women are some of the most educated women in this country, because we realize that if we want to achieve anything in life, we have to do it. Nothing is going to be given to us, and the boys haven't really matched us because they've not had to, right? So you have this huge discrepancy between really independent, successful women, and where are the boys, right? The boys haven't, like, so you need to just, they need to buck up their ideas. Having said that, you know, find them in your own time. They are out there. I'm sure they are. They are. Of course they are.
They are.
Yeah, there's plenty of great supportive men out there. It's just finding the right one. But if an auntie says, this is the thing when aunties go, you're too independent or you're too whatever, having too much fun. I mean, I don't even know what that means.
Yeah, what is that? Thing?
It's more of a reflection of their own life, like the lack of, I feel like if you as a woman and haven't been able to make choices for yourself, why are you putting the same shit onto the next generation? Surely Asian women should be going, go for it, beta. Go.
Yeah, I didn't get to do this. So you go for it. Yeah.
Why are we then going, oh, you should be married? Like, what is that? Like, come on. You had a terrible time. You were all forced into marriage and you were expected to do what your mother-in-law told you to or your husband. Why would you want the same for your daughters?
Exactly. It wasn't fun for you. So it's not going to be fun for anyone else. I've spoken about this in another podcast, actually, because I almost feel like it's like almost being a bit anti-feminist in a way.
Why?
Why do I think that?
Yeah.
Because I think it's like, for me, it's about fighting for women and, wanting what's best for other women. And if you didn't get to have that, you should want the best for another woman.
Completely agree. Yeah, it's like Asian women, like we hold up the patriarchy. And I talk again, it's like it's all in the book because I feel like I don't blame those women because they have been so fearful in many ways of and their lack of choice and lack of voice, right?
Absolutely.
They don't have any agency. And all they feel is we need to make our daughters do what, in inverted commas, the right thing. Otherwise, they will have a difficult time, right? Or I don't even know. They, with the community, will reject them, whatever that means. Or, you know, actually for the mothers themselves. Like I said to my mum, you just wanted me to marry somebody because of what it would say about you, right? You just didn't want to have to deal with the shit.
Right. Like, as in, like, if you're married, the box is ticked. Like, okay, done. She's married. Done.
But yeah, you're right. It is like it's they are by not letting daughters, by not empowering us, they are holding up the patriarchy. They are basically just agents for it, aren't they?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And what do you think needs to be done to encourage more brown girls to go against the norm and go against the grain in terms of being independent and taking on these not so normal careers?
So I would say if you are passionate about something, right, if you're really passionate. So it's so funny. There are all the sort of people, I know a few people who are doing some amazing stuff who are also like teachers who've then gone on to telly or barristers who've become musicians. Like we have to have our career to fall back on first. But genuinely, I feel if you are passionate and you know that you want to do, you want to pursue something because you love it and that's where you see your future, just do it. I mean, even if your parents don't get it, like, because ultimately it what they want us to be successful and what success is for them is financial, right? They want us to, because they know what it's about, like not having, struggling. You want your children to be settled. And I get that. But there's more to life than that, right? There's more to life. And I also believe if there you once you're in a world, you can find, like, there's so many avenues and doors open in different worlds that you didn't even know about. So for instance, I worked in radio, but I didn't really know how TV's made until I got into telly as a runner. And then you see that there are jobs as directors, as production managers, as producers, as camera, as sound, as lighting, as set designers, as, you know, script. There's so many jobs, but you wouldn't know about that unless you were in it. And so I would say, have that conversation with your parents. And of course, this is based on what your parents are like and how you can be with them. So you've got to judge it.
Yeah, you do. Because how do you think that, like, the best way to tackle challenging family members? Like, what's the best way to go about it? Because, like, for myself and even for you, I feel like we could have that conversation with our parents and I could argue till the cows come home, basically, and say, I'm going to do it anyway and I'll get my way. But for some people, they can't do that. They don't have that option.
Yeah, I know. And I like, and if you know, and if you're from a South Asian community, you know that that could be any variety of extremes, right? Some Asian parents are genuinely terrifying. And if your parents are genuinely terrifying and you feel that they are going to react so horrendously about you making something as simple as a choice for yourself about what you want to do in your life, then I wouldn't be too worried about upsetting them. Do you know what I mean? I feel like there's only, as somebody who's now in my 40s, I honestly feel that we have to shake the apple cart. And like, it's not going to work making your parents happy the whole time. If your parents are forcing you to do things you don't want to do, then you are onto a losing game by making them happy, because you are going to wake up one morning and think, what have I done with my life? And ultimately, it's your parents have lived their life. They've made their choices. Whatever they were, whether they were forced on them or not, that is their life. You have to make choices that are going to make you happy. And I can't say that enough for South Asian girls. And you know what? We will make our parents proud. And they know that. They know it. It's in our bloody DNA. Like, whatever that means. Somehow you've just got to pursue what you want to do. You have to.
Absolutely. I love that. I'm like, oh, I feel a bit emotional after that lovely speech. I was like, it's so true though. And I love what you said about it being a losing game, because it really is, like, Yeah, that if it's not one thing, there's going to be another thing. And there's so many different expectations. And at some point, you have to fight for yourself.
You have to. And this is, I've seen it all around me. You know, I've got the family members, extended family members who wouldn't let their daughters wear makeup, wouldn't let them wear like revealing clothes, wouldn't let their daughters out, wouldn't let them do anything. And like, all it does is like, makes you really sad. It breeds resentment. And then you wake up one morning and you've married the man they want you to, and you've had a kid, and you're looking back and you're like, where did my life go? And, you know, for parents as well, come on, let's just give our daughters a break. Like, let them breathe.
Yeah. Let them breathe.
So much expectation on girls, and we are smothering them, you know? And yeah, I think letting them breathe is the best thing you can let them do.
Absolutely.
I mean, I was reading the incredible interview in the Vogue. Malala Yousafzai is on the cover of Vogue.
Yes.
And it is amazing. I love that she's on the cover.
I know. I'm so proud. I need to read the interview, but I was so proud to see her on the cover.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's down to the incredible new editor, Edward Enninful, who's just like shaking it up radically. All of a sudden, it's like Vogue's become really relevant. But you know, she talks about, and she comes from a really patriarchal community, a Pashtun background, but her father is the one who's empowered her, right? Her father is like, educate daughters, and oh, she's amazing. She's amazing.
I need to read that. I definitely need to read that. But Anita, besides the book, which I'm loving, like I said, is there anything that you're doing or you'd like to be doing that would encourage brown girls to take these unfamiliar paths?
Oh God, yeah, there's so much I want to do. I feel like now that I've written this book, let's see what happens when it comes out, but hopefully it will sort of change the landscape a little bit. I'm all about encouraging young women to stand up for themselves, empower themselves, and step into this industry. I will hopefully now, I want to be, you know, active in encouraging young women to come forward and come and work in TV, come and work in radio. These are the spaces that need you, right?
Definitely.
Tell your stories. If you want to write, get writing. If you do want to be a TV presenter, like now, I mean, the world has changed so much. When I was starting out, it was literally 5 channels. That was it, the BBC. And now you can produce your own content, get on YouTube. If you have something to say, say it. I feel that young generation now are so much, you're so confident in your identities in a way that I wasn't, and people are unapologetic about who they are, and I actively encourage that. There's never been a better time to be a South Asian woman because we are badasses. We have so much to say, and we have a story that hasn't been told yet, and it's happening slowly. Did you see Lady Parts on Channel 4?
No, I haven't. I feel like you need to write me like a list of things to...
Recommendation. Lady Parts for everybody, right? You need to watch it. It's Channel 4 comedy drama about an all-female Muslim punk band.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's brilliant. You got to watch it. So I just think, get out there, like you, Anshul. You know, you're active. You've written a book. You're doing this amazing podcast. I think there's space. You're celebrating other women. You know, what you're doing is amazing. So more power to you. Keep going. Yeah, and you know, this is a vital resource for young women around the country, I think, around the world, hopefully.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, I hope so. I hope so. And also, you're also, like I said, you're a blueprint for a lot of young women out there, and myself, actually. So yeah, you're already, and you have been doing incredible things, and you've almost set a pathway, which is so lovely to see.
Yeah, I'm so pleased. Thank you so much for saying that. That's really nice to hear, because yeah, I do hope women see me on TV and go, if she can do it, I can do it. But you know what? There are so many more paths to be able to get your voice heard now. Just get out there.
Yeah, just do it. Just start.
Honestly, that is the best advice I would give anybody. Like my mum used to say to me, don't talk about what you want to do. Just do it.
Just do it. Yeah, your mum's right.
The only difference between the people that you see doing things and the ones that you don't is they've actually just got off their asses and done something about it. So if you've got a burning desire to tell a story or make music or whatever it might be, just get on with it. Just go for it.
Yeah, that actually leads on to, I've got two last questions for you. One of them is, if you could go back and speak to your younger self. You've written a lovely letter to yourself in your book, but I feel like the letter is words of encouragement. But if you could go back and give yourself one piece of advice, knowing everything you know now, what would it be?
Don't spend too much time worrying about what other people think. Really, it's like just exhausting. That actually, what I would say is your instinct is right. What you feel is right. Go with your gut and don't worry too much about other people. Don't worry about what the aunties say.
Yeah. I love that. I love that. That's great advice. And finally, what message would you send to the talking aunties or family members that are putting pressure on young girls or guys that are just trying to live their best lives?
Yeah. For those aunties, Auntie G's and Uncle G's.
Yeah.
Rather than telling your children and other people's children, even worse, what they should do, how about listening to what they want to do? Because I think you're going to learn far more by opening your ears to the younger generation. And you might even learn something yourselves. So stop telling them and start listening to them.
Yeah, rather than opening your mouth, open your ears.
And open your mind, right?
Yeah. Your
generation is different and your life, your worldly experiences were so small. You know, you might have got married when you were really young and moved in with your in-laws. And what you listen to these young people who have a whole new world out there, and you've got to listen to their feelings, like pay attention. I feel South Asian parents have so much expectation on their kids, and it's like you do what we tell you and that's it. But how about listening to them and letting them do what they want to do?
Exactly. And then they have this expectation on, like, the other family members put expectation on themselves as well. So it's like they're trying to impress everyone around them. And then therefore they put this unneeded pressure on their children. And it's all just quite toxic and dysfunctional sometimes.
Oh, completely. I mean, I have literally got zero time for people beyond my own parents who have anything to say to me.
Absolutely.
Like, honestly. Parents really need to stop listening to the extended family. And it's very difficult for women in particular, because my mum is the same. And I've seen it a lot in like the nag, nag, nag that you get from other people and other women and your in-laws or whoever it might be, just can be really destructive. It's a very hard thing, you know, and this is, as you know, it's layer upon layer of cultural expectations. And when you're in it, it feels so suffocating. I think what the only way it's going to change is by young women like you, Anshul, you know, younger women, people who like us having this conversation to liberate young women to say, you don't have to play this game anymore, because it's on it's a road to nowhere.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Finally, I have a quick fire association game.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I'm just going to say a word and you're going to say the first thing that comes to your mind really quickly. Okay, are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, let's go. So first word, aunties.
Busybodies.
Burfi.
Delicious.
Weddings.
Chaos.
Swear word. Go on, I know you want to.
I was going to say what swear word. Salah kutta haram.
Wow, that was a good one. And you know what? We haven't had that one ever. So brilliant. Love that. Okay, money.
Necessary.
Makeup.
Ooh, fabulous.
Ooh, family.
Love.
Chai.
Garam garam.
Yeah. Dogs.
My heart.
Yeah. Dogs, my heart. Yeah. I know. And the last one, coronavirus.
Fuck off.
Yeah. There you go. There's a swear word.
Coronavirus can fuck right off.
Yeah, go away. We don't need you. Go away.
Double,
please. Please. Oh my God. It's been so lovely speaking to you, Anita. I want you to tell everyone what you've got coming up, and also where they can find you.
Okay, because I know that the people who listen to you are amazing young women who want to be inspired. And I would say two things. So the first thing is I've got a book coming out on July the 8th called The Right Sort of Girl, and I've written it for you. So I hope you enjoy it. And secondly, I would love you all to listen to Woman's Hour on a Friday. It's BBC Radio 4. And maybe you've listened to it. Maybe you love it. Maybe you haven't. But if you haven't, I would love for you to tune in.
And congratulations on that, by the way. That's incredible, incredible stuff.
Yes, big old space to take up. And if I don't get more Asian women and women from different backgrounds listening to it, then I'm not doing my job properly. Anshul, you're amazing. More power to you and good luck with everything. Keep going, girl.
Thank you so much. Honestly, thank you, thank you. And yeah, I've really enjoyed speaking to you today. How fun was that episode? I loved chatting to Anita, and I really hope you enjoyed listening to that conversation too. It just goes to show you can do anything you put your mind to, and if you want to do something enough, even the talking aunties or cultural pressures won't stop you. So this is your sign to go out there and make your dreams a reality. You can do it, sis. Once again, thank you so much, Anita, for joining me on today's episode, and to you guys for tuning in. Don't forget, if you're listening on the Entel app, there'll be direct links to everything we spoke about in today's episode, like some of the shows Anita was talking about. And lastly, please subscribe to the podcast, rate and review. It really does help me out. And thank you so, so much for listening once again. I'll see you on the next one.